This morning is the first part of a special two-part series on what's happening in 2018 and beyond. And I want to talk to you about our mission and our vision today, and I want to talk to you about the first of three key parts to making that happen. And I'm excited to talk to you about this because it's something that we've been working on for a while. Been working with the staff and with the church council, and we've been praying through it, talking to God, and we feel like we are ready to talk to you. And so this morning, I want to start that. But there's so much stuff, like I said, it's going to take me a couple of weeks to do it. And so I hope you'll be here with us next week as we really get into the nuts and the bolts of all of this. And because it's exciting times and things are happening. And so we want to share that with you of where we want to go next. And so I want to tell you just a couple things, though. First off is that vision. I looked up in the dictionary what vision is. And Webster's dictionary defines vision four ways. The first thing it says is it's the act or power of seeing. In other words, sight. And so that's pretty obvious that vision is sight. Okay, so that one's easy. But the next one, here we go. It says something usually seen in a dream, especially a supernatural appearance that conveys a revelation. So in other words, like anytime you see in the Bible that a prophet gets a word from the Lord, or you take John in the book of Revelation, the book of Revelation is actually five visions that John had. And so that makes sense to us as well. The third one is the act or power of imagination. In other words, seeing how things could be or should be. And the fourth one is, and guys, this is sort of like when your wife gets dressed up, okay? This one is a lovely or charming sight. And so, guys, that's the way it should be, right? When your wife gets dressed up, she should be a vision to you. And I know they are, that our wives are. And so those are four ways that Webster's defines vision. But what we are talking about is the future of First Baptist Gainesville. And we're talking about how things can be and how things should be so that we can be the type of church that we are called to be. And not every church is called to do the same thing. We all have the same mission, but how that works out individually sometimes looks different. One church doesn't look like another. And so every church has our own place in the overall mission of God. But we base our vision on God's revelation in Scripture, on what He tells us He wants us to do, and also from talking to Him. This is why we talk about prayer all the time, because part of understanding our place in what God has for the church in general is having that relationship with Him, that we talk to Him and hear back from Him. But friends, anybody who tells you that they know exactly what's going to happen 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road, a year down the road, they're just leading you on. They're just telling you stuff. Because God knows what will happen. He knows when and why and how and exactly how it's all going to play out. But friends, He's given us broad strokes on what we are supposed to do between the larger mission of the church. And we're supposed to go forward in faith and find that place that He has. But faith means that we go into uncertainty. We go into finding our way and trusting Him as we go. The key thing is that we are going, all right? Jesus had this conversation with the disciples right before He was arrested. And they came and asked Him about His return. And this speaks to vision pretty extensively. And in Matthew 2, or 24:3, they came to Him and they said, "Tell us, Jesus, when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age." And then Jesus began to talk about signs of His second coming. But then He gets to this place where He says in verse 38 or 36, He says, "But concerning the day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as it were in the days of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them away, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, and one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, and one will be taken and one will be left." And then here's the punchline for us, for the church. This is what He tells the disciples that they are supposed to do. "Therefore, stay awake, For you do not know on what day the Lord is coming. But know this, if the master of the house had known what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. You see, the problem with vision is that a lot of it's man-made. A lot of it, you'll see people get up and they'll, and whether it's in a company or even in some people that, or even in some churches, they'll get up and they'll say, we're supposed to do this or that. And it's a man-made thing that glorifies us. And that's not God-given vision. That's a master plan. But what God-given vision is when we do what Jesus tells us to do. And so, friends, we're going to let others build man-made dreams. But we are going to be alert. We are going to be ready the way that Jesus wants. And he gives us very clear direction. And vision is that perfect future of the way things ought to be. Vision is that ideal situation. But I am convinced that vision is more than a building. Vision is who you are and who I am and who we are together in accomplishing the mission of Jesus Christ. Jesus described this be alert and be ready idea very clearly in a parable that we call the parable of the 10 virgins. It's in Matthew 25, and it was right after the passage that we looked at before. And he says this, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and they slept. But at midnight there was a cry, here's the bridegroom, go out to meet him. And then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and you, go rather to the dealers and buy some for yourself. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came and said, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he said, truly, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. You see, that's the thing, is the people that are ready, the church that is ready, are the ones who will be at the feast. That doesn't say that the virgins didn't expect a bridegroom. But it says the ones who knew him knew that he might come at any hour, at any time. And so they were ready day and night, every day. They were looking forward to him. And that's a tough thing for some of us because we've got busy lives and we think I've got all of these pressures, I've got all of these things going on. But Jesus says that we should be ready all the time. And so any vision that we have has to be focused on preparing us to be on the lookout day or night for his return. And people will say, well, it's been 2,000 years since he left. And so what do I think? It's going to be sometime this year or next year? We don't know. But one day is going to be the day. And when that day comes, we need to be ready. And so what our church needs to do is to focus on preparing ourselves and helping people in this town, in this region, and all of those that we can influence in the rest of the world to be ready. And so our voice needs to be focused and unified that we are ready. And so our vision has got to include that we set the table as best we can so that it is prepared, that our hearts are prepared, that our minds are prepared, that our families are prepared, that when Jesus comes, if it happens in our lifetimes, that we are prepared. And so it is my prayer that over the next couple of weeks, you're going to join me and looking at the beautiful things that this church currently is, but looking at who this church is going to step, are going to become next, and the places that we're going to step into next. Because I believe we have a roadmap for the upcoming year. And I believe we have a roadmap for beyond. And again, it's not a step-by-step thing. It's a direction that we're going so that we can be the people that God calls us to be. You know, Gainesville's an interesting place. It's a place of contrast, isn't it? I mean, you think about it this way. It's part small town, and it prides itself on being the most patriotic small town in America, but it's also close enough to the Metroplex that people go down there to go shopping. And so we're small town, but we're sort of influenced by big city as well. It's a place where people grow up, and then they go and move around the world, and then they work, and then they come back because it's a great place to live. They when they're in high school, they go, man, I want to go out and see the world. I've been in a small place my whole life. And then they get out there, and they spend 20 years, and then they go, you know what? It was pretty awesome there. And so they come back. It's a place for the young, but it's also a place for the seasoned. It's known for hardworking people and its commitment to what is best about Texas and about our country. And so our mission within that, our mission in this place, our mission of every church, or the mission of every church that are followers of Jesus Christ authentically, are pretty similar. And the way that we are going to talk about it is that we are one church, many generations, loving Jesus and serving our neighbors. And that's pretty straightforward. Churches say it different ways. Love God, love people, share Jesus' love, however you want to say it. But it's the mission that Jesus gave us at the end of the book of Matthew before he ascended to heaven. And so the mission is one of those non-negotiable things for a Bible-believing church. And so that's what we do in a mission. But yes, we have people that are different, that have different ages, that are in different places in life, that like different styles. Yes, we are all of those things. But you know what? That's our strength. Because we have people that can connect with people across age ranges in this town and in our county so that we can share Jesus with them effectively. And so we celebrate that. And along the way, because you are a church of multiple generations, you have some people who have been through decades of this church. I mean, we have people that are in their 90s that have been in this church their whole life. And so they've seen 9 decades or a portion of 9 decades of church life. And when you've been in a church that long, you've seen a lot of things happen. And one of the things that can happen, though, when you go that far, is that we have to make sure that we recognize that the past is the past and the future is the future. Because let me tell you a truth. In any church, the past can become an idol. When we are looking backwards only, and we are saying, remember when, that can become an idol just like any other idol. But Jesus doesn't ask us to live in the past. We celebrate where the church has been. We enjoy the history of the church. We appreciate that this church is over 145 years old and that God has used this church for a long time. But we also have to always be looking for the next step. Because if we're not looking to the next step, we're not exercising our faith, are we? And so the church always has to be moving forward, moving into the future, moving to where Jesus has us to go next. But the road into the future is never, ever easy. The road into the future is not for the faint of heart. You see, we see brokenness everywhere in this town. You can't go down very many streets without seeing hurting people out there, can you? And you see people who have hopelessness, maybe generational hopelessness. Maybe they don't have hope because their parents didn't have any hope and their grandparents didn't have any hope because they don't see any way out. They don't see any way forward. We see people who believe there is no future for themselves or for their families. And some go into such a place of despair that they say, why even try? We see children in our schools who learn cynicism and had misconceptions, about God from a very early age because their parents have them too. We've got to change that, guys. We need to be a place that we help families to break the cycle of hopelessness, to find hope. And so the first part of our vision, the best version of us, is that we have so much love for our neighbors that people will overcome what they believe to be impossible odds, but that we know is not is completely possible because of Jesus Christ to help them overcome those impossible odds, to find Jesus' love and invest their future in Him. You see, we need to be building towards such an influence in Gainesville, Texas, and in Cook County that people will not doubt the love of Jesus, that they will know that He has love for them because of the way that we love them. And so by the way, the things we say, by our attitudes towards people and our actions towards them, they will have no other alternative but to conclude, Jesus must love me because these people who love Jesus love me. And so we want to be those people that help people to find that they belong, to find that they believe that Jesus came and died on the cross for them, and so that they can become who God created them to be. And so I want to talk to you over the next couple of weeks about those three things: belonging, believing, and becoming. And today I just want to hit belonging. Belonging is the first one, and it's the most important, because a lot of churches in the past, if you go back 15, 20 years, they would say you got to believe before you belong. And that understanding of the place of belonging and the place of believing is important to defining who we are as a church and how we view people in our community. You see, the question is do you belong before or after you're a believer in Jesus? And it's an important question, and it sounds silly to some, but it's a big question because it says everything about who we are. And the answer to this is, it's complex in a way, and it's very simple in a way. The truth is that you are not part of God's family until you become a follower of Jesus Christ. Scripture is clear on that. But people can belong to our family, be a part of us, even as they are learning about Jesus and coming to grips with having a life of faith. They need to know that they have a place at First Baptist Gainesville before they come to faith. They need to know that our hope and our dream is that they will come to know Jesus Christ. And we've got to show that in our attitudes and our actions. The way we respond to people, we must not think as far as us and them. We need to understand that we are all people who need Jesus. That we're just we've taken the step of faith if you're a Christian, but we had to make that decision also. And so we have to understand that we have been in the shoes of the people that are deciding about Jesus right now. And so we have to view them as friends. We have to help them understand that they have a place here, that they can have a home here, that Jesus wants them here, and we want them here too. And we help people know they belong in five key ways that I want to hit today. The first one, the big one, it's that we authentically celebrate Jesus' love through worship and song and preaching and prayer and lifestyle. Everything we do has to be to God's glory. Not just how we sing songs, not just how we teach, but how we live, how we speak, how we represent Jesus to the world, the love that we show, who we are on the inside. Everything we do is a part of our worship. Every time we have an opportunity to talk to people outside of our church walls, it's an opportunity for worship. Because you got to understand, when you are telling somebody about what Jesus has done for you, that too is a form of worship. You are giving glory to God when you do that, and that is worship. And so if we go out into the world and we act as if it's us and, oh, it's them, no, then that what's happening is we're not worshiping during those times when we have those thoughts. So we must be people at all times who are thinking, how can I worship God in what I'm saying and how I'm treating people, how I'm loving others? As I tell you often, the enemy wants us to focus on ourselves. In fact, you see this. This is exactly what the devil did during the temptation of Christ. When he went up and talked to Jesus, look what he says in Luke 4, verse 5. The devil took Jesus up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. Now, what he's trying to say, he's trying to paint a vision, a man-made vision for Jesus. He's trying to say, what he's going to say is, look what he says. He says, to you I will give all this authority and their glory. That's man-made glory. For it has been delivered to me, and I give it to whom I will. If you then will worship me, it will all be yours. And so Satan has this idea, the devil has this idea that if he can show Jesus enough castles and enough palaces and enough money, that Jesus is going to go, oh man, I want that. As if that's what motivates Jesus, which is stunning in the blindness of the enemy. Because look what Jesus says. Jesus says, it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. See, Jesus is about a bigger picture than man-made things. Man-made things are just a place to gather. Man-made buildings, it's a bunch of walls. It's beautiful, but it's walls. What Jesus is about is your heart. And your heart has to be about him. And so people need to see in our singing. You see, every time we sing, every time we open our mouths and a voice comes out in praise to the Lord, that's part of worship. But it's all about whether worship is effective, whether singing is effective. It's all about your heart. If you come in and go, oh, my voice is terrible. God doesn't want to hear me. Nobody else wants to hear me. And trust me, I struggle with this because I don't have a good voice. But if that's our attitude in singing, then it's not worship. It's an exercise. But we need to have the attitudes that we're so overflowing with gratitude and joy that it just bubbles out of us. People need to see that. And in our preaching, we've got to stand with Jesus every time. See, it's not about what I want. It's not about what leadership wants. It's not about what any of us want. It's what he wants from us and for us that matters. Romans 12:1 says it this way. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. In other words, the whole you, everything about you, not just your mind, but physically as well, everything about you. Present yourself as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Did you catch that key word of testing? You see, testing is part of moving forward. When you move forward, when you move into the uncertain future, that's how you are tested. That's how God renews your mind. That's how God brings you to where we need to be. And in our prayer life, and in our actions, we need to honor God. We don't just go to God in prayer at that moment when we're at wit's end. We shouldn't wait that long. We can do that. But we should go to him when we're having our good times, when we first see an inkling that something's going sideways, when we're just walking down the street and it just seems like a normal day. We need to be talking with him. We need to be thinking, today could be the day. I'm ready. And the way we're ready is that we have a relationship with him that's always on go. How do you do that? Well, the book of Romans tells us in chapter 12. It says in verse 9, it says, and these are things that are who we need to be all the time. We need to let our love be genuine, verse 9 tells us. We need to abhor what is evil. We need to hold fast to what is good. We need to love one another with brotherly affection. Do you feel like we do that all the time? Do you feel like everybody you meet, you want to hug them like your best friend? And I think if anybody raises their hand, we're stretching the truth a little bit. Because we have people that we struggle with, right? But we are supposed to love one another with brotherly affection. We're supposed to be the people that are so excited to see one another. People go, man, that's a cool club. I want to be part of that because those people love one another. It's not because of their clothes or the cars they drive or anything else. It's because of who they are and how they see one another. I want some of that. We're supposed to outdo one another in showing honor We are not to be slothful, but we're to have zeal. We're to be fervent in spirit. That means be excited in serving the Lord. We rejoice in hope. We are patient in tribulation. We're constant in prayer. You know what that's really saying? That's really saying we never give up. We never have a moment where we go, is it worth it? I was telling my Wednesday night group this week that when Jack, my son, was signing up for the Marines, the recruiter gave him a piece of paper and said, I want you to write down why you're becoming a Marine. And Jack said, okay. And he said, the reason we're doing that is so that when you're at recruit training, boot camp, when you're there about halfway through, I'm going to send it to you. Because there's going to be a moment when you're going through all the things that you're going to go through that you're going to go, why am I doing this? And I'm going to remind you. And so Jack wrote that all down, and I thought, you know what? That's really true all the time when you're going forward and you're doing things that are difficult. You see, we look at a professional athlete, and we say a professional athlete works hard because they are a professional. We look at a military person, we look at a SEAL team member, and we go, that person works hard because they're a member of an elite team. Do you understand that you are a professional at being a Christian? You need to remember that every day you need to be training and thinking and focused on Jesus so that you can be the best version of you, so that people will see him through you. We also contribute to the needs of others, seek to show hospitality. We bless those who persecute us. We bless them and we don't curse them. We rejoice with those who rejoice. We weep with those who weep. We live in harmony with one another. We are not haughty or arrogant, but we associate with the lowly. Isn't that what I'm talking about? Getting outside the doors with people who don't think that they can be here because of our stained glass windows. Because you hear it all the time. People say, well, if I walked in, the lightning would hit me. I'd be struck down. And what they're really saying is, I'm not worthy. And we need to let them know that we think they're worthy to be here, that we care about them. We repay no evil for evil, but give thought to what is honorable in the sight of all. And if possible, as far as it depends on us, we live peaceably with all. You see, when we live in the ways that this verse tells us, we will have eyes to see and ears to hear what Jesus is doing. People often say, well, my prayer life has gone stale. And the truth is, they've closed their ears and they've closed their heart, and they've got some stronghold in their life that they're not letting go. Because when we open up our hearts, we open up ourselves, and we knock down the walls that surround us, that we've protected ourselves because of hurt in our past, we find out that Jesus does speak. That Jesus does give us direction. That Jesus does take us where we need to go. But when we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what Jesus is doing, there's another part. It's having the courage to go wherever he tells us to go. And so our mission to share Jesus with a hurting world is our priority. It's what we do. But we also need to send our people. It is time for us to send our people and spend our resources to grow the kingdom locally and globally. This year in our budget, we have approximately 8.67% of our giving that automatically goes to missions. Now, that doesn't include what we spend on Next Gen and Mini Gen outreach. What we do in the community with our students. That's just the adult stuff, okay? But that is a great place to start. But I want to call for something today. I want us to make it our goal that we, in the next 3 years, get to 20% of our giving goes directly into missions. There's a lot of churches, they call it a tithe, and they try to get to 10%. I think that's a great place to start, but I don't think that's enough, because if you've heard me talk about giving as we did a few months ago, and by the way, you guys really responded in giving. I'm really proud of our church. The 90 days of giving that we did, we were ahead of our budget. And yeah, well, you need to clap for that. Yeah. That's a big step, because our church was behind budget. And we did really well the last 3 months of the year because people stepped up and gave. But we need to make it our goal for 20% of our giving to go to missions. Because like I said, 10% is a great place to start, but we are supposed to sacrifice. We're supposed to do that. And if we ask people to sacrifice individually, we need to work toward that as a church. And that's going to take some work. That's going to take giving. But we can do it. But giving money by itself is only a part. It's time to begin to send our people again into the world. And so our missions team is looking at two different international missions opportunities this year. And so I can't jump ahead and tell you where they are yet till they meet in January and make a decision that that's where they definitely want to go. But it looks like, by the way, our missions team had a lot of turnover this year, and we had some people that passed away on our team. And so we basically have rebuilt our missions team from scratch. And so we have one person that carried over from last year, Joe Sykes. And so we built a whole new team around him. And so they're going to meet, and we're going to confirm all that, and we're going to come back to you in the very short, near future with international opportunities. And also opportunities in Texas to send internationally and in our region. But we want to see people's lives change. You know why going on missions is important? Going on missions is important. God could send anybody. God could send anybody out there. He will send people. But the thing is he also wants to work in us so that when we see lives changed, our life will be changed also. Because you know what happens when you get a little taste of seeing people come to Christ and you get to be a part of it? It just ignites the fire to get even more people. And so what going on missions does is changes you so that you can help others change yet more around you. Locally, we're going to work toward being a church that, because we love people in this town so much, we begin to grow to the extent that we're forced to wrestle with the building that we meet in, with the place. We're going to wrestle with, where are we going to put everybody? How many Sunday school classes are we going to start? How many small groups do we need to start? And we're going to talk to you about Sunday school and small groups next week. But we need to be a church that does the little things so that the big things will follow out of our submission to the will of God in our own lives and in the life of our church. And so I want us to make it our goal that we will be the most caring church in North Texas, period. I want us to see, to look at this next couple of weeks and look back on this in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years, and say, that was the time where we decided that we were going to be, and some of you are great at doing this already, but we all need to be people who care about other people to the extent that we're willing to get uncomfortable about it, that we're willing to invest ourselves because we know that lives matter to Jesus. Our community connections team is already working on it. They are already working with our local schools. They're working on several different organizations that we're just about to give to you. And one of the first ones that you've already seen, if you're in a Sunday school class, we came around right before Christmas and we talked about adopting a teacher. We're working with two schools, with two of our schools in the city. We're going to start there. And we want to adopt teachers in those schools. We want to go out and be blessings to those classrooms. Because friends, if we only focus on young adults, we only focus on youth, it's too late. We need to start focusing on children when they're young, because by the time they get to be junior hires or high schoolers or 20-year-olds, if we haven't told them about Jesus yet, it's so much harder. And so we need to get into our schools and let those kids know that there's hope for the future in Jesus. There's hope for them. There's a future for them so that we can help them break the cycle of hopelessness. Remember the verse, 1 John 3, verse 1. It said, "See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared, but we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is." You get that? You, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, are one of God's children. But there are other children out there that are his, but they don't know it yet. That are his, but you're the one that's supposed to talk to them. You're the one that's supposed to care for them. You're the one that's supposed to help them see a future that they cannot see for themselves. That is our job. And so our job is to help people know they belong. You see, we belong because Jesus said so from the cross. Jesus said so when he hung up there and said, these people are worth dying for. And we need to understand that he didn't just die for us. He died so that we could tell them that they matter too. And that we could all give glory to God. And so our mission is to make sure, first, that everyone knows they belong. Next week, we're going to talk about believing and becoming. But I just want to close by saying today that you do belong. You do have a home. This place, these people, are part of God's family. And you can be part of God's family too with us. And so I want to invite you today. I want to invite you today that if you don't have a home, I want to invite you to be a part of our home, to be one of us, because we're going to go out there and we're going to make a difference. Next week, I'm going to be telling you a lot more of the nuts and bolts stuff of how we're going to do those things. But I just wanted to paint the picture of who we're supposed to be today, who we're supposed to become. And it's all in here. It's all about who we are in our hearts. Because that's the vision that Jesus started with for his church. It's to who we are. Because anything else is a trapping. Who we are is the what matters the most. Who you are and how you live matters to Jesus, as he died so that you would know.